Hey, I'm Whit, and I'm looking forward to spending some time with you today sharing a conversation with Flavien Repaire. Flav is an actor and improviser in Strasbourg, France, where in 2003 he founded an improv theater that remains active to this day. Well, at least active if we give allowances for the oddness of theater in 2020. He's taught improvisers in 27 countries on 5 continents, and he's taught and performed in at least 6 languages. Flav and I get into a discussion of language about halfway or so through the episode, which you'll want to take in, but there's a lot more that he has to share. So with that, let's move right into the Flavien Repaire episode of the Improv Comedy Connection. Well, Flav, thank you for joining again. We had a conversation before the lockdown and then had a little bit of technical stuff, but so glad that you have carved out some time to talk again. And we have a whole new perspective to talk about in terms of what our conversation was. And I'm excited to dig into a whole bunch because when we talked, I feel like it was a start for this podcast anyways, of trying to expand the conversation beyond the North American English-speaking style of improv or the set of styles.
Yeah.
With you, you've grown up and lived in France your whole life?
Yeah.
And then your first exposure, I'd like to talk about this as maybe our starting point, was with the match format.
Yeah, exactly.
And you were very active in that for like 10 years or so. Can you start with maybe a little bit of a discussion of the match format, maybe kind of general to introduce it to folks who might not be familiar with it, as well as how you got into it?
Okay, cool. So the match format originated in Quebec, so in the French-speaking part of Canada, early 80s, like 79, I believe. And it was started by some people from the experimental theater in Montreal, and amongst whom was Robert Gravel. Gravel. So he initiated this. So there are kind of many legends about how it started and where it started around this ice hockey format. So they mapped the decorum of the format and made it an improv show. They used improv exercise and improv tools, I guess, in their theater trainings and experimental theater. And they came up with this ice hockey game format. And then it got on TV, got pretty popular and pretty big there. And so nowadays in Quebec, this match thing is the most commonly spread format, and it's also institutionalized as you can. Yeah, you will have improv in your school life if you're a Quebec citizen, for sure. Mm-hmm.
And it's a short form style of sorts, right?
It's mostly short form. So it's mapped on the ice hockey game. So originally, there was, or the format, the original format is two teams of 6 players, each having one coach. There's a referee that will prepare a set of 2 different major types of improv. Either it's mixed improv, so the two teams get to perform on the same title at the same time, or it's a compared type of improv where teams play a scene inspired by the same theme, one after the other, and after the mixed or the compared scenes, the audience gets to vote for their favorite team. So that's the two major types of scenes you get, mixed or compared. And then for each scene, the referee will originally have like a little like box, like this kind of spinning barrel with cards and the titles on it. So mixed, compared, the duration of the scene, the number of players in the scene, title for the scene. And also it's kind of divided in open scenes on one side and many games and genre games on the other, which we call categories in French. And that's it. And there's an MC and a DJ to facilitate for the audience how things goes, points, penalties, and things like this, and cheer them up and ask them to vote in due time. Basically, the format.
And there's a winner
at
the end, right?
Yeah.
And the competition is part of the format.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I think I've heard you say something to the effect that you felt that had an effect on the actors or the players or whatever they might be called that you didn't like. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, true. I think so. The format, like, don't get me wrong. I think it's a beautiful format, especially also pedagogically wise. Like, I think it's smart because it teaches you some kind of basic like rules or set of values that you will find in it. But I think the drawback is sometimes the egos are kind of boosted by special rewards, either winning the match or getting, because originally there's also like 3 awards that are granted at the end of the performance by a random member of the audience. There's like a storytelling star interpretation, so like characters, star, and the shooting stars that combines both of these skills. So that's some kind of like of extra rewards that you can boost yourself up. Oh, I get the shooting stars and we won the match with the team. So, of course, it's all a decorum. You're supposed to play with it to really play the competition. So Gravel describes these 3 layers of the person. The improv player is you are yourself. Then when you play improv match, you're a sportsman, like a competitor, an improv match competitor. And then the 3rd layer is the characters you play in the scenes. So there's this 2nd layer that is really enhanced in the sense that you're here to be supportive of the other team, but also, play it a bit feisty or whatever, like act on this. Okay, we're here, we're full of energy. We have this dance that we do when the audience votes. We try to build a nice image on the bench of how we do our caucuses. And dancing where the people vote, be reactive. There's these exchanges after penalties with the referee that are also part of like kind of showing off your wit and having a funny wit reply when you get whistled a penalty in the game and this kind of thing. So it helps the audience to get into the we are here to support a team. So in the old days, I remember when I started the championship in the amateur league, I had friends coming with banners to support our team and like playing. And so the audience gets super active, super supportive. So that's an extremely nice show to be at. As an audience member, it's amazing because you go to theater and you have a crowd of 200 people that are just like shouting, clapping in their hands, shouting up suggestions and things like this. So it's super interactive. But that can pull the bad sides of some players. They will play bad jokes or like play at their partner rather than with their partner sometimes to just drop the last witty line, drop the last punchline that the audience will remember because they don't have a big attention span. So, we laughed so hard at the last second, boom, points goes to this team when the other team felt like we build all the platform, we build all the story, we were strong on relationship or an emotional game, and this guy comes, just drop a joke and wins the point. So it stirs some feelings in some players. So I think that when you can play the decorum and forget and play get playful with the competition and not take it seriously, it gets really beautiful.
Well, that's, I got my first start in a competitive structure as well with comedy sports. And if you did invest yourself in winning, then you weren't going to be the kind of player that people would enjoy as much, even though the audience, as you said, might respond to something because you dropped that joke. It's a type of denial of the overall experience.
Exactly.
For people. Yeah, but audiences do seem to be able to grab on to the notion of a competition as a structure around improv. And is that still, is it a stronger audience for that type of improvisation in France than longer forms or more theatrical or other non-competitive structures?
I think it's becoming different now, kind of recently. I would say maybe the five last year, we've seen a boost of teams having international experience, doing different things, getting really away from match. I mean, this started like longer ago, but I feel in these last years, now people know a bit more about the variety of improv, but match has such a strong identity that it's really prevalent.
Yeah.
People know mostly about this. The classical joke is having people coming to your show after you did a long-form musical improvised play. They come and thank you, and they would say things along the lines of, thank you, beautiful match. Like, it's not even a match. It's not even a competition.
Right.
It's a musical with musicians and costumes or whatever. But it's so carved in their habits of what improv is. So they strongly know about improv match. There are strong, huge amateur and professional leagues in France. It's still what's the type of format that drags the most people. So with improv match, the amateur league in my city, it's a room of 200, and it's three or four shows, or at least two shows a month, and it's full houses everywhere when you do competitive formats.
Yeah.
Do Mondial or World matches and stuff like this, international competitions, full houses all the time.
I do want to talk more about kind of what you're doing now, but before we do that, can we spend a little bit of time on Gravel? Because he obviously, and those he worked with, but Gravel seems to be the one who people look to as setting the foundation for match and the initial spread of improv, at least in Quebec. And then as match went, I mean, that influence followed. Not a lot of writing by Gravel that's out there, right?
Yeah, no, not so much. There's a few books, like he wrote a few books. And in general, there's not so much writings in French. More and more now, some solid literature is coming out. But not that much in French.
What would you say, or how would you describe his philosophy of improvisation?
I'm not a super expert on Gravel, so you better ask some people from there.
Okay.
Nick Babouchi. But yeah, I know it was part of this experimental theater in improv, and there's a few videos of him on YouTube talking about the game, about the improv match, about some like strategies and the philosophies and the values are very common to what you find in North America or in other philosophies at the time. So I think, yeah, he was really an inspiring and great improviser as well. The idea that he had of the match and the ultimate way of playing the match, like really playing this competition, but still being able to play beautiful scenes, and the philosophy of being supportive to your partner and to make them look good, it still perspires when you see him talking about improv. Yeah, I think it's really of value, and it's a bit sad that we don't have more of him. Like, there's a few interviews or a few formats for TV, like interviews, a bit on the sports angle, where he's talking about strategy of how to conquer the ice rink space.
Right. Yeah.
More points, but with deep theatrical views on it, actually.
Well, I think I saw somewhere, and maybe this wasn't, This will be a paraphrase, so this won't be an exact quote, and I'm sure it wasn't in English, but some thought that he had that improv had the capacity to bring even the world together.
Yeah, I was thinking about the quotes. Yeah, he said this beautiful quote that someday improv will rule, will reign on the world, and bring people together. And then, people would get united thanks to improv. That's what he said. And I really like this quote, setting the bar.
yeah. And do you feel that that's playing out in the improv community, or are we well short of that type of a goal, even amongst ourselves?
I think amongst ourselves, it's expanding. It's incredible how it's expanding, and now is this this lockdown and everything going on online and more global. You play with online with people from all around the world, so it's more and more true for our community. And as for the world goes, there's so much applied improv going on, so much spheres of the population and society that are getting touched by the fairy of improv. So I think it's expanding, and the more and more people, social workers, health people will go and use improv. So I think it's spreading now in bigger circles of society, more and more. So hopefully we'll get there. We're gremlins. Improvisers are gremlins. They are blossoming and popping up everywhere in every community. This boosts so much confidence for everybody, but it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing. So let's talk about when you started to move, not necessarily past Match, but when your improv world got bigger than Match, we'll say it that way. I know you founded or co-founded your own theater and started playing with different formats, but I think prior to that, wasn't it an experience at a festival that led to you looking at the world in a little different way when it came to improv?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I started this improv Match thing. I did amateur league for a few years, championship, won a few things around, then started my company, kind of being fed up or felt limited by the formats. And the first eye-openers were the little World Amateur Improv Match Championships. That was my first like kind of international meeting. So on a tiny level, it was already interesting through Match to go to other cities in France, play with different teams, find different team styles. So that was always, the first little eye-opener. Then it got bigger, going to Belgium, Switzerland, Quebec. And yeah, I was especially impressed by the, in my time of world championship, by the Belgian and Quebec team that always won those championships and played beautifully and had their styles and their specificities. And also then being inspired by the old mentors or the old stars of the Quebec scene, because they were also doing other formats, very explorative, experimental theater. So I'm thinking about like Frédéric Barbouchy from Saint-Place Experimental Theater. It was really an eye-opener on other ways to do improv. No referee, no MC, nothing, just people going wild and freestyle with a lot of music and lights. And very organic, and it was like totally different. And then later on, we got invited to a festival in Flanders, in Belgium, and an English-speaking festival. And that's where we really met people that were trained and baby-bottled in Keith Johnston philosophy that we only kind of heard about along Robert Gravel. And then we met people and we got to take their workshops to perform with them and to go, okay, so that's the thing. That's their values. That's their mottos. That's a bit more of what Johnston's style and school of thought is.
Was there something specific that stood out to you as a big change or addition to how you looked at the world?
I think I remember from this first festival in 2008, the motto of the festival, or like the motto, the thing from Johnston that stuck out the more was this: be positive and be in the moment a bit more. So that's concept I kind of heard about, the be in the moment, sure, but I got to the roots of it, or to how really to apply this vague concept. What does it mean in terms of how to behave on stage and how to be with your partners in scenes? So this be positive thing was a bit of a, not a shock, but it was a bit like, okay, be positive, but I like to go dark. I like to be a bit negative or conflictual, because I was taught like it's a powerful dramatic tool. And also it's the French style. I think we like to be provocative. We like to be revolutionary. We like to sometimes it's just for stupid fun and it doesn't go much far, but it's just because you tell me I cannot do it or I have to do it. I kind of don't want to do it. So this be positive, it took time to really get into my system. And when I saw the outcome on stage, I was like, it's way more powerful than what we achieve in our current life now as improviser. Like there's a big gap between how they behave, how they play, and how this positivity influences what they produce. So it was like, okay, I have to reconsider a lot of what I feel because I see it's different and it's very, very good.
So I wonder if we can unpack that a little bit. So the approach you had before was not as positive or not as focused on being in the moment. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is like, you know, what changes did you make other than having sort of a different attitude, if there were other changes, or what were things that you had to drop that you had been taught or learned or had done over time?
Ego. Dropping a lot of ego. It was a lot about this. And I think it derives from bad feelings, derived from this being in this competition mode and thing, getting out of shows and you're unhappy and you feel really bad and you're pissed for a stupid reason and you're pissed at other people and there's old quarrels like, really big fights or like, kind of hatred with this specific other team because we always defeat them in the semifinals, but they always win the final because they do shitty blah, 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 blah move. And so you feel not good enough. You feel sorry. You have like, oh, I remember when I decided I was quitting Match as a performer, as a player and focusing fully on the starting company was, yeah, I was on the bench Sunday and I was like, no, I saw them doing this three times already. I'm fed up. Like all how to be better. And yeah, playing at each other, you try to build something nice and you have somebody playing in another format or playing another game, just playing at you and dropping a punchline on your face. So yeah, it stirs you in some bad ways, and it's nice when you win, and when you don't want to win, that's where you win. When you
right
things. So I don't want to put the emphasis too much on the match being a bad format.
Understand?
It can push you towards this. So yeah, it was bigger revelations.
It requires a certain discipline, I suppose, to stay detached from the competition.
Yeah.
If improv is something beyond the tool to win, right? Mm-hmm. Improv is something higher than that.
Yeah, exactly.
How would you describe what the purpose of improvisation might be? If someone was going to pursue it, what is the end goal, if you will, of being a professional or proficient improviser?
It's a good one. Very nice question, but very hard. I would like to think about a bit more about this, but I would tend to, I think what pays off more if we're talking about winning or competition or making it good or whatever you call it, trying to answer your question, is just to drop this, to fuck it and to be relaxed. I teach about a lot about being relaxed and working with your body. And if you're relaxed, everything will be fine. You will not be in your head. You will not overthink. You will be more detached. So it's kind of getting into this Zen mode that helps you play whatever the situation, whatever partner you're with. Just be relaxed, present, observe, use your eyes, look at your partner, take what's there, like really be present, react, and be relaxed. So, and the positivity helps a lot.
Yeah.
I think that's makes better improv than trying to win a point. And that's what I was seeing in the Anglophones. They were doing awesome, beautiful improv all the time because they were not playing at each other. They were playing just for the scene.
Well, I think there's a little bit of a theory that there is an aspect to the discipline of improv that is something that we're all pursuing. And if we all got all the way to the end, it would be very similar in a sense, right?
Yes.
It might be expressed in different ways, right? Yeah. Because you may have a goal of using this tool for comedy or for drama or to tell a certain story. But ultimately, it seems like it is a basic human activity. And maybe that's what art is generally. It's a human expression.
Exactly. It's just a way to express oneself. And yeah, the freer, the better. So I like formats. I like frames because they can teach you a lot of specific things. But and I explore it a lot, so that's why I enjoy all the more total freedom nowadays, because I have a lot of tools to play with. So I make my own formats on the go,
right,
and it gets really freer and better.
Yeah. And your first format, or at least maybe the signature format for your theater, is random. Is that still what you would describe as the main format?
Yeah. I think it's the core of what we do. It was not the first, because first, of course, we did like a lot of the French-speaking teams or companies. We mapped the match formula on something else. So we had a TV show, funny competition game thing.
Okay.
And then we worked more on music and improvised theater together. There, the bridges between them have to build organically from this, and working a lot on scenography, on the other added values in theater productions that you don't have in improv, actually. So because improv is people talking, performing, but theater is also lights, music, props, objects, sets, all of this, and working organically from these types of inspiration. And yeah, this became random, and it's today the core of how we like to improvise and how, of what we do. This is our style, our ideas, our philosophy.
So there are aspects that are more theatrical than, I mean, there maybe a way to come at this question a little bit is, I think a lot of North American English speaking improv would be described as a few people in casual clothes, just a couple chairs on the stage and go, right?
Yeah, very true.
And I think that is something that is not as appreciated in maybe some of the European sensibilities to it. So what's your critique, Flav, of North American improv?
It's going to be very biased. I think it's very cultural, very educational, and also speaks about the trouble for improv to be recognized in Europe generally. When you have big nations of big theatrical traditions, we fight versus Shakespeare, Molière, Goldoni, the Greeks fight versus their antiques. So come now, get fundings from cities saying, we're going to make some shit up. We don't know.
Yeah.
Give us some money for nothing. So we brought up these extra values to make our shows look more solid. So it was kind of, I think, a survival thing that we all naturally did is put extra effort on how you present yourself. You're putting up a show, so you have a costume. Even if it's kind of neutral and black and classy, you're putting up a show, so you cannot be the random guy on the street. We're all already suffering from this label. So make efforts on the way you go on stage, the way you go out, the way you present yourself, the way you introduce your show, etc. So that's all things. The thing we solidly worked on was all the outside of the improv, to be more free to improvise and do good improv, often with some guardian, an MC or a referee or a host or somebody that mm-hmm. mostly guide people through the thing.
So is a part of that the funding source and being able to do you get government funding, for instance, for
no.
For your theater? No? Okay.
No. It's still today in France, we very rarely had improv in the big national theaters or the big institution. There were some partnership here and there. I think people in Brest set foot on a national stage for a project at some point, but it's very, very hard to get funded for improv. Sometimes for Strasbourg, for my city, I know the only improv that got funded was I think the marathon that Inédit Théâtre did years ago when they did their 200 hours of improv and things like this. Marathons, okay. They got a little bit of funding for this, but it's really, really hard to get some. It's getting better, though.
One of the things that we've explored a little bit in the podcast and at least a number of the episodes has been talking about the financial models and the impact that they have. When you looked at your theater, was it your expectation that the primary funding source would be people buying tickets to shows? Was it classes? Was it training for organizations, something else? And what has that turned out to be?
I think we didn't expect to make money from the tickets. I mean, at the beginning, it got money a bit in the association, and that enabled us to buy some space to work, to buy some material and stuff like this. So that was very good. And then, when we started professionalizing, it was for the professional artists among our group. Classes for sure to help getting a bit of steady income, and then it's all the corporate shows, private events, when you get booked by some firm or thing. So that's the source of income. It still is today what helps. But also in France, for artists, we have this specific status. We're very lucky to have it. So it helps us have a sustainable life and being creative and still have kind of a steady income. It's a very complicated and unique status in the world. The world's envious for it. So that's kind of, it's possible to live from improv in France through this.
I see. Let me go back to the English-speaking festival and the, I guess, the multilingual experience that you have, because you speak a number of languages, and you've taken in improv teaching, and you've performed in different languages. What impact do you think language has on the experience of improv?
I think it's really a strong thing to work in another language than your mother tongue. I think it's really, really helpful as an improviser because it kind of forces you what you're supposed to do naturally is listen more than you speak, look at your partner, express more through your body and emotions. So it forces you to do the what you're learning in drama school or in acting school. Do less and not. So it's a very good teacher. It can be scary. When I started, I was scared by it, or it could be problematic when I was trying to be my French improviser in English. Doesn't work, not gonna happen. So just discover who you are as an improviser in another language. And it's really funny because you get to be somebody totally different. My colleague, best friend, would say, why is it so shitty to improvise with you in French, Flav, when it's so awesome to improvise with you in English?
Well, what do you think the differences are between those two improvisers?
we all talk way more in our language, and as a creative person, and as me in my real life, I'm very verbal, and I would already make long sentences in my everyday life, so I can be a nightmare on stage with this in improv for sure. And yeah, with another language, you don't have the paraphernalia vocabulary to pick from, so you go to the point, you're efficient, you make short, efficient phrases. I keep teaching my students like a good improv sentence is subject, verb, complement, full stop. This is not what I do in real life. So
yeah,
pay more attention, less. You go to the point. You use simple concepts and simple words that impact your partner best. Also, I think
one of the writers who American writers, Ernest Hemingway, is often noted for the simplicity of his language. Mm-hmm. Not the simplicity or the depth of his stories, you know, as being less, but that he used the language in a simple way to communicate well. And that to me is, I think, part of what you're saying. And we can grab on to words or try to use them maybe to put too much weight on the words, if that makes sense. And I know I do that. That is, I'm a word guy, but that simplicity of conversation, I think, is important to be clear with your partner and clear with the audience.
And I think also in another language, somehow you're kind of more vulnerable. So when you let go of being perfect or whatever, and just because with French, I can show you who I want you to see, because I can protect myself with the language in a very subtle manner, with very specific nuances of feelings and expressing them that are more layers to distantiate myself from the world. I think language is the strongest mask that we wear as humans. So when you're in another language and you cannot hide with your usual verbal tools, verbal manipulation tools that we use in social interaction in English, like you're going to be more of yourself, I guess. So also more honest, more connected also to who you are and to your partner.
I like that notion of the language is almost like a wall that you have to pull down, right?
Yeah, I think it's the biggest shield. That's the biggest shield.
Yeah. What do you have, if you've thought about it this way, do you have some exercises, tools, techniques, or thoughts about how you make it less of a shield?
I don't know if it makes this less of a shield, but to show less of a shield, I mean, it's a matter of something that is also important in improv as it is in life, is to express more, acknowledge more your feelings, and express them. I guess being more authentic or more genuine in who you are is being able to stand for what you like, what you don't, how you feel in the moment. This makes me feel this way. And I think it's also a great tool as an improviser to use from your partner. The you seem like, or you look like, or I have the impression that you is a good starting point to get from your partner. So it works for yourself. It's a beautiful tool for oneself to drop your walls and be more vulnerable on stage. Is acknowledge how you feel. Oh, I feel weird. Okay, I'm going to tell this to my partner. I'm going to use the weirdness I feel right now as Flavien improviser. You make me feel weird. Why don't I put out it out loud? It's true. It's authentic. It's what's really happening. It makes me an easy actor and a good one. And works well into your partner. Hey, wait, you look concerned. If you really are, then it makes you be a good actor. So for me, that's the easiest acting tool, is just say the truth. Say what you see, say what you feel.
And I know there are times that I feel like, sometimes on stage and sometimes just in real life, where you access that emotion that maybe you couldn't have described. It just came out and you recognize that's how you were in the moment at the same time that you said it.
Yeah.
And it feels almost extra vulnerable, but it's also extra freeing in many ways too. And then you can deal with it, right?
Yeah. These moments when you step into some zones that you know of yourself and like, hey, wow, this is me. It belongs to me. Maybe the world doesn't know it's out there, but this was scary, but it was me for a second.
You have done some performance also with people without a shared language.
Yeah.
As well. Can you talk about that experience and what you learned from that or observed from that experience?
I really loved it. All the Lost in Translation formats, I think that is from Randy Dixon. I performed this one in a few festivals, each performer playing a language, their native language or another. And as I said before, it's really good, a good exercise, and it makes a great show because there's more showing, there's more listening, there's more paying attention to each other, and there's more simple things going on. The organic works are coming a lot in this type of format. So yeah, I would really encourage people to do more in different languages. Yeah. Mm-hmm. At first I was afraid, I was petrified. But then, yeah. Just go for it. Look at your partner. A human is a human. You recognize when a human is happy, when a human is pissed. You know it. Just say, hey, mm-hmm. You look pissed, Sandy. Yes, I am. And then you go. You get your scene, and you can make it positive. Yeah.
Since we last had a conversation, I mean, a lengthy one anyways, things have moved into quarantine and online. And you spoke a little bit about, I guess, increased globalization that has been at least apparent to us. I think it was always available, but now that much more so. Mm. What do you think is different about, or what will be different on for the improv community going forward in light of this experience?
Yeah, I guess it's a bit hard to say from now. I think there's still a lot of the world that is mostly going online. We're hoping for a slowly getting back together, and I have festivals planned in the fall. Yeah, it's kind of a question I've been having is like, yeah, how is it gonna go now? Is it gonna only go online? How is it gonna affect the improv, the way we work, the way people work or make a living out of it. I haven't been doing that much improv online. Actually, mm-hmm. I kind of stayed away from it. I didn't really watch any shows. I feel kind of strange about it. But I did some fun activities online, though. We did kind of like immersive experience with Ohana, the international group. It was pretty mm-hmm. much from improv. So yeah, I think people are eager to get back to real life festivals and things like this. So hopefully there's going to be a boost when things get back in, as it has been. Like I feel now I got tons of calls for shooting for things. So people are excited to start. So they do a lot. So I hope there's going to be a counter effect of the lockdown once things open, that everybody will go, crazy and travel again and stuff. But also it may be the opposite effect, that now people get lazier in terms of, oh, I can book Joe Bill. He's sitting in his living room and that's fine.
Right. It's cheaper. I don't have to buy a plane ticket or get a hotel room or.
Yeah. And how it's going to impact. Yeah. Are we going to be able to improvise live? If we stop for so many months, I don't know. It's really hard to answer this.
I guess some of it comes back to what the purpose of improvisation is. And it is a different art form online if you are improvising, because there are different restrictions and all of that sort of thing. And it's a different interpersonal experience because you don't have all of your senses available or even the full view of an individual.
Yeah.
That's not available to you, right?
Yeah, I don't have the smell. I don't know how to play.
right. Do you? What have you found different in terms of the way you connect with people interpersonally if your in-person interactions are restricted as they have been? Just in life.
In life, what do you mean? If it feels different or if my interaction has changed?
Well, let me give you one thing that I've noticed in my life and see if that helps explain the question, because I don't know of a easier way to ask it. But one of the things that I've noticed is that like my parents have much preferred to use FaceTime or video calls than I did before lockdown. And I think part of it was that they want that additional layer of communication. Just to see somebody's face gives you more to work with than a voice, right? So I feel like I have a different sensibility about video calls than I did before. And then when you have interpersonal reactions, if they're social distanced, which is what we've been doing, then you're so far apart and you're not touching or hugging when you greet each other or anything like that. So I don't know if that helps, but it's kind of like, what is different about the way you interact with others today versus before?
I think that's kind of the thing. It decomplexed everybody. So now I would have more FaceTime calls, even if like in France, I can actually see my friends. I can have people, I can visit people, I can hug, I can kiss if I want. But globally, we cannot. It depends.
Right.
Well, like, okay, we'll just hug and we go. And some people are a bit more cautious, so it's a bit kind of divided. But we're pretty free for now to do what we want, wear masks and everything. But it has changed a lot for the video calls. And also it's a good thing also for actors. Now the like self-tapes and self-auditions are going to be kind of more of the norm. So it's going to be less of an issue. It's like, oh, you cannot come for the audition. Then we won't consider your application. I've been doing this. I've been doing two or three self tapes for auditions at home. And it got me a job. So that's a cool thing.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a very good thing. Now I think companies are also more aware that you can actually do efficient work from home office. So it's good. It gives more time to people. So my partner now, she's able to travel actually and get more home office, and their bosses see that it actually works. So that's a benefit of the lockdown for sure. Yeah, that's what I can see. But with my friends, the interaction, the physical interaction, have not changed so much. We tend to hug a bit less or to kiss a bit less, because French people do cheek kiss tend to greet. So it has toned down a little bit. We do elbows or our feet check with my chums, my pals. This has changed a bit, and I still feel the miss from my international friends or like the further away friends, like now I haven't been traveling so much, so they start missing.
The festivals in Europe, I feel, in particular, and other parts of the world too, but there's a concentration of festivals in Europe. Plus the variety of cultures. I mean, there's obviously some commonalities, et cetera, but there's plenty of differences in language, a lot of languages in a relatively small area, as opposed to the US, for instance. How important do you think that festival culture has been to the growth of improv in Europe, or if you can speak to other parts of the world where maybe you've had some exposure to their festivals?
It's been immense, this movement of like this last 5 years, there's been festivals flourishing everywhere. Yeah, you have like the old ones, like Amsterdam is like an antique European festival, or Berlin, London, I guess. But now it's like everywhere, and the Barcelona and the Athens and the Irish festival, and all the Polish festival, the Danish festival, like everywhere. There's festival in every capitals and big cities in every European country. So it's a huge, huge contribution to each of the communities, to each of the countries, and to all of these countries mixed together. Like, because I travel so much, I got so much experience. People are traveling way more. So now in France, in the French community, the French community knows more about this world because we travel there. We bring it back, and now we have a few professional groups in France that travel, that exchange. So it is the same effect in every country. So we keep seeing each other, networking. I'm part of this OHANA International European Group for 7 years. There's younger groups inspired by this. So there's the SIN. A group, there's a lot of meetings, there's also countries now having a symposium. It's happening in France, it's happening in Poland, where all the improviser from the country have like a yearly meeting in Italy. So it's booming in each country, and the connections with our neighbors and even the whole Europe is huge. So mm-hmm. that's really a great move. Like I feel it's mega big bang that is happening in Europe, in every country. And the eastern, mm-hmm. the eastern countries, they've been like kind of 10-12 years ish in the scene, and they are eager to have more. They are craving for improv, for getting everything. So it's completely incredible. And for the other part of the world, same. More and more connection already were happening before all this lockdown and this virus thing happened. And you see people in Nepal having guests, in Thailand, in Cambodia. I was in Nick Burns Festival in Australia a couple of years ago. So I met with part of the Asian scene, that is the world scene. I kind of knew the least. Mm-hmm. It was another culture, another new world, and we're starting Singapore Festival, and boom, it's everywhere, it's global, so it's incredible. I love it.
I know a little bit about OHANA. Can you? There's seven of you in that group, is that?
Oh no, I mentioned being there, starting there 7 years ago, but now we're close to 50, I guess.
Close 50 people?
Yeah. That's our cap because, it's hard to organize meetings with more people. But now we're close to 50, I guess, 48 maybe or something like this.
So tell me, what's the purpose of OHANA, or what are you trying to accomplish with that group?
Nothing. we don't accomplish anything. No. We accomplish. That's me being a revolutionary. I love OHANA. It's the best thing that happened in my life in terms of thing that were big eye opener and incredible improv moment was actually getting in OHANA. So we're around 50 members from 22-ish different countries. It started 7 or 8 years ago. It was founded originally by Swiss German people, and Austrian people. As a core, some of them decided to go study in Luzmus and in Canada for 6 months. They came back, they wanted to build more, so they started having these meetings and then opening the thing. So it was originally the Young European Improviser Platform, a project. Now it's not only young anymore. It's not only European anymore. So we have also people like some US expats, some people from Israel, from outside of Europe as well. And it's basically exchange platform. So we meet three times a year, two weekends in Germany and one full week in Slovenia. And then we do work kind of inspired on the open spaces or open source things. So we gather around topics, practical, theoretical. We work for a few hours. We get back together as a full group. We give feedback of what we achieved in our subgroups. And we do jams, activities. So it's basically a space where you go meet your improv family, get to be who you want, take part as much as you want. Nothing is mandatory. And it's we all share the costs. So it's affordable the same way for people wherever they come from. So, yeah, that's a space where we come exchange around and beyond improv.
What do you think has been some of the biggest lessons that you've taken out of that experience?
I think what I love about this place, because it's really like a cauldron of super creative, inspiring people. They're just all amazing, all so different. And what I love is the acceptance that is in this group. Like Ohana means family, and it really feels like a family. I mean, sometimes I'm just like super tired because I have a crazy life and I get to see these people and they are working their asses off on crazy projects. And I'm just here chilling, drinking coffee, watching them work, and I do nothing. You can be who you are if you want to be there for 3 days and do intense improv and work on projects or just relax or just have a nice conversation, play music together, have drinks, talk about improv. It's really nice because it's a place where you feel accepted and you can really grow as a person as well as an improviser. And it's a great place to just connect and have a network of improviser. So it's not the direct purpose of it, but of course, we invite each other, we do things each other. We also build some formats that go to festivals. So it's not like a purpose, because we don't want to represent Ohana as with five people when we're 50, but we create projects there, then we export into other festivals and things like this. So it's incredibly inspiring. It's incredibly relaxing. It's a family. It has really this feeling of us and the rest of the world. And we're happy to incorporate a lot of people from the world in it. It's a joyful combination of crazy, talented people.
I appreciate the fact that you're seeking out a group that has some intentional differences within it. You're gathering with diversity in the group, and that experience will have its own way of pushing you as an artist and I suppose as a person too.
Yeah, you have we're mostly like 20 or 30 for the meetings, so you always have somebody exciting with a different experience, with a different point of view. And it's also very helpful because as a supportive space, it's like really awesome when you have issues that we all have, because it's mostly improviser that are established, often are directors or have companies, they have theaters, they sometimes own places and everything. So a lot of us are professional and making a living out of it, but not exclusively. So it's just genius in terms of support, because you hear somebody say, oh, now I'm facing this whatever issue, and we're three to like, oh, been there, done that. It's not as complicated as you think. Let me help you. And you get things that are like just sorted out so beautifully, and you get to work, to try out things and to help people build things that they're going to bring home, they're going to bring to their communities. So yeah, the world is just like smaller and smaller thanks to this type of initiatives.
Wonderful. Well, Flav, I really appreciate the chance to spend some time with you, and hopefully we get the chance to do this again, but it'll be the second episode as opposed to the second attempt at a recording. But
sure.
Well, stay safe and well. And again, thanks for the time.
Yeah, you too. It was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
As we engage our own experiences with different ones, there are nuances and differences that can be spotted, but certainly more that will become clearer the fuller the picture of the different experience becomes. I love hearing some of what seems to be likely universal elements of good improv. Things like dropping any personal goals and objectives and instead being relaxed, working and being within your body, not overthinking, and getting into a mode where you can play whatever the situation might be. As Flav suggested, good improv will come if you can be present, observe, look in your partner's eyes, react honestly, and be positive. There's a lot to think of with respect to language being our strongest mask or strongest shield, as Flav put it, and the impact of playing in a different language where the shield will feel less strong or less reliable. All improvisers have heard the phrase talking heads, and it's hard to pin down exactly what that is, because scenes with good dialogue in traditional theater can be quite compelling, and they can be that as well in improv. However, if the improvised scene is an over-reliance on the shield of language, it will obscure the improvisers themselves and lessen the experience. You can get more information and links on Flav on the episode webpage at theimprovcomedyconnection.com, or you can go to flavianrepair.com. It's been a treat to have you listen in on this episode of the Improv Comedy Connection. It's been really rewarding to see that people are passing along episodes to their friends and fellow improvisers, stand-ups, and other communicators. But whatever we're doing right, we want to continue to grow in how we serve you through this podcast. So in addition to rating and subscribing, I'd love to hear from you regarding topics and potential guests for future episodes. My name again is Whit Schiller, and I'm an improviser out of Milwaukee with Fishsticks Comedy. You can check us out at fishstickscomedy.com, and you can connect with me on social media at Whit Schiller on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You can also go to whitschiller.com for additional content and resources to help you in your comedy and communication journey. Thanks again for tuning in to the Improv Comedy Connection.